The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of The Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey friends, and welcome again to my program, Afternoons with Mike. Always a joy to be with you. Always a joy to get to talk to people like my guest today, somebody that I've met for the very first time. He's relatively new in his position at Palm Beach Atlantic University in the Orlando campus, and I'm talking about Joe Sharp. Joe, welcome to my program.
Thank you, Mike. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you here, and I've just, again, met you briefly just a little while ago, and we've talked on the phone, though, and you know, you're in a position here that, you know, it's a beautiful campus. I've heard so many great things about what Palm Beach does, and especially in the area of adults and people who maybe are like myself later on in years, maybe not as old as I am, but but people who are either wanting to add to their degrees or their education in general, or maybe in some instances getting a degree for the very first time. Absolutely. All of that happens with you, doesn't it?
It does. We take it from someone who has no college at all to those that might be looking at their graduate degree. So, and it's all walks, all ages. So you wouldn't be surprised that we've got folks that I'm guessing in your age bracket that are there or have gone through it. So,
oh, that's wonderful to know. I know that it's often that you see stories about people who are in their 60s, 70s, even, right, getting a degree. And, you know, it's really kind of hard. It's a private thing, I think. It goes from person to person. It can be different. But the motives for why people want to do that are pretty much as varied as any other aspect in their lives, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. I've been doing this for 33 years. And one of the best parts about it is that you see the impact what education does. And it may not necessarily get them a new job, a promotion, but what it does is allow them to complete something that perhaps they've started, something they've always thought about. But what it does to them on a personal level, you know, they become better husbands, better wives, better moms, dads, mm-hmm, better employees. Or in some cases, better employers, because it just allows them that sense of accomplishment that we all long for, and adult students are just rich for that.
And, you know, even if it isn't for the fact that they might make more money or have positions opened up to them, what you just said really is another major motivation. They just feel better about where they are and the sense of accomplishment. You know, there's one thing that I think can be said about this is that people who have not had it and then get it, it's almost like a completion, like a dotting of the I and a crossing of the T that they always wanted to get.
Absolutely. I remember when I walked across the stage when I completed my MBA, and the dean at the time of the school, she shook my hand, gave me the diploma, and she said, "They'll never take it away from you." And I loved that, and I've always remembered that. It's been many, many years ago. So, yeah, the motivation there is both personal and professional. There's some that feel like they've lost that promotion because they didn't have that degree, and that motivates them to come back. So it is all over the place. The graduate levels, when we have our counseling program, they want to hang that shield out. They want to become a professional mental health counselor in some cases. And how rich that is with the mission of our school, it fits right in to help people.
Now, you know, you hear this so often in discussions, especially on the news and people that are being interviewed, and there seems to be in recent years a little bit of a downplay about the importance of getting a degree and, you know, comments like, well, it's not for everyone, and that would be true. But the truth of it is that when anyone is job searching and they're looking around for something, maybe especially this last year, with COVID being what it is and what it continues to be. Right. Right. A lot of jobs that people held were suddenly not there any longer. And there is this thing that often shows up in a job listing, must have a degree, must have a degree, must have a degree, a degree essential. So, you know, for all the talk that it's not that important, it sure seems to be something that's on just about every job posting.
It really is. And until the industry's out there says, you know, we're going to look at the individual for who they are, not necessarily what their degree is or whether they even have a degree. Until that happens, and I don't see that happening anytime soon, education is always going to be the ticket. One thing I always tell students that we're talking to, or prospective students, is that one thing a degree will do, it'll get you an opportunity. We won't guarantee them a job, but it'll give them an opportunity they don't have now, which is an interview. They have to have that degree to get through the door, to sit in front of somebody to be interviewed. That's what it will do for them. We can't, again, guarantee them that job. That really comes down to the individual, who they are, with their experiences. It will get them that opportunity, a chance to apply for a job.
Yeah. What do you say on this before we go off this topic for a second? Because I think this is a really important thing for any parents that might be listening. What advice would you have to a parent who maybe has a college age kid or a high school, maybe a high school senior, and the kid is saying, I think I just want to start work, or I don't know about going to college. What advice would you give a parent?
Well, really, I think as parents, it's our responsibility to guide our children in the way that looks down the road. Can we give them opportunities down the road? And I think that education and helping them understand, now, maybe it doesn't need to be with a private school. Maybe it can be with a state college. But go in and start that process. Encourage your student, your potential student, your child, to pursue that option. And as you said earlier, Mike, it's not for everyone, but I think I'm a big believer in have the conversation anyway. Have the conversation and walk through it. And if there are skill sets that may, working with your hands, hey, that still involves education, you know, whether you become an electrician, a plumber, I mean, that still involves education. So as parents, we're responsible, really, and accountable to our children of just at least instilling that in them.
And I think if that is instilled, I think that that kid does have what my folks used to say, a leg up. They're going to have an opportunity, like you said, that they may not have otherwise.
Absolutely.
I know that I'm so grateful for all of the adult education that's there, but there is still something to be said about going ahead and investing those young years, those early years, when you can, to get at least that undergraduate degree. Get that thing out, and then you may want to work a couple of years and then like do what you did, get your MBA, and that's a good plan, isn't it?
It really is, because the education in itself, unless you're going into a specific area of study, nursing, for example, medicine, engineering, which are very, and there are many others, but are very specific to an industry. But if you're going to go into business, psychology, communications, things like that, that's check that off. You get it, check it off, because your experiences from that point forward are going to be what gives you the opportunities later in life. You don't want to have, and which is what we are dealing with, is so many of our adult students come in, something they started, now they got really good experience, but they don't have that degree, as we were talking about earlier. So they're coming back and getting that. So if you're younger and you're able to do that, get the degree, because the experience is going to happen no matter what, right? You are going to be 10 years older, with it or without it.
And I think it's just easier. I find that, the longer you wait, the more difficult, the more distractions, even responsibilities for older children, and then all of those other things, they become like major distractions.
They do, and I call it life gets in the way.
Yeah,
life
true.
Gets in the way.
Well, I'm glad life does get in the way. Speaking of life, your early life, you're a Hoosier like I am.
I am.
My goodness. Always fun to talk to another Hoosier.
Absolutely.
Now, yes. You grew up in the Marion area, yep. Right?
Yep.
Tell everybody where that is.
Marion's about an hour north of Indianapolis, if you're familiar with that, in central Indiana. A town of probably about, well, it used to be 30,000, I don't know, with the auto industry and those types of industries that kind of really took a downturn over the years, probably a little less than that, but it's kind of surrounded by cornfields and farmers.
Mm-hmm. Now, is that on the road to Kokomo?
It is about 25 minutes from Kokomo.
Okay. Yeah, it is. I've been right there. In fact, we had a flat tire on that road one time.
Okay.
That's right. So I remember right about that. Yeah. Now, Indiana is a gorgeous area. A lot of fun things can be learned about Indiana just by watching the movie Hoosiers.
Oh, yes.
I think that is not an untrue statement at all. And you're being a Hoosier, you would agree with that.
Oh, absolutely. Especially with that subject matter of Hoosiers being basketball. It's got the reputation of that, and mm-hmm. it's so true. I mean, it's just ingrained in us. The basketball hoops, not only in driveways, but like in Hoosiers, nailed to barn buildings, and you're playing there. I played a many on weekends where we'd rent a barn, and up in the barn, up in the loft, they had basketball hoops, and me and my buddies would go back and forth back in the day.
And the cornfields and really those beautiful wooden old school buildings yes. that are depicted in that movie.
Yes.
I could think, and boy, when I watched it, I saw that movie, Joe, you'll like this. We'd moved to Florida in 1985, and then the New Year passes. My birthday's in March. So for my birthday, March 1986, that was in the movie theaters. And a friend of mine here in Orlando took me for my birthday. I left work. We went out, watched a matinee of that movie, and I sat there and I cried watching that movie because the scenes were just like my growing up years. Yeah. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, those small little gyms. I remember being in junior high playing basketball, traveling around those back roads of Indiana, and I played in many of those little gyms. Yeah.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah. Well, this is fun to talk about, come up to another Hoosier like yourself. That's great. Now, one of the things that I learned about you in our chat before we started this program was the fact that you were not a believer at this time of your life when you got out of school mm-hmm. and you're starting to work for colleges, mm-hmm. as I believe it was as a recruiter, right?
Correct.
And yet you find yourself working for a Christian institution while you're not a believer. Now, you know, we don't have to name names or whatever, but how did that happen?
Well, you know, it was, I had sold newspaper advertising in an earlier job. And my cousin and I, we were the same age, and I got into another type of industry, and he called me one day, my cousin did, and he said, "Hey, I just interviewed for this job as a recruiter. I'm not interested in it because it's based out of Indianapolis, but you might be." So I interviewed. It was a small school in Indiana,
mm-hmm.
and I interviewed, and they hired me as a recruiter for admissions. Now, one of the questions, because it was a faith-based school, was, "Are you a Christian?" I said, "Well, no, but I'm familiar with this school, and I can be respectful." So I had to interview with the dean and had to get through that door.
And but you answered honestly.
I absolutely. Yeah. I mean, because even back then, being a Christian, I had my doubts about Christians, to be honest with you, but I knew I could respect that. I wasn't a crazy guy, so I wasn't going to. Their biggest concern was, is he going to reflect positively on the school?
Mm-hmm.
And I assured them I would, and I did. And so that's how I got into it. It was a job. What I saw was in sales, recruiting, and it was during the early years of the non-traditional degree completion program for adult students. And it was just a big, very, very successful program. And so I was able to cut my teeth on it there. little did I know 33 years later, I'd still be in it.
Right. You're still in it. And along the way, obviously, this man has become a believer. And that's a fun story all by itself. But before you, just a little side note on that, I'm intrigued to think about this question and to see what your thought would be on it. Mm-hmm. You mentioned that going into that, you were honest, number one, but you knew, you said, you knew that you could be respectful and not bring any sense of embarrassment either to the school or even maybe compromise where you are. Don't you think it would be more difficult for people today to be able to do that?
Oh, I think so. And I think to begin with, I think there's a lot of people that have no idea what Christianity is about, right? I mean, they've grown up with no aspect of it in many, many cases. And it's sad. It's very sad. But I think that's true. So I think the world is different. The temptations are stronger.
I agree.
The acceptance of what it means to just live your life has, the morality has just disintegrated significantly. So yeah, I think today it would be much harder.
You know, I've referred to this book so many times. Gene Veith wrote the book, Postmodern Times. And in the book, he talks about the fact that what the day that we were in, and an explanation about what postmodernism is and how that people would view Christianity differently in postmodernism than, and now I believe we are post that. We're past that stage into a point in time to where not only do people not view it with any sense of affinity at all, but it's almost a threat and there's almost a hatred. Basically, and that's what I'm seeing happen. I mean, we're right near where we could be seeing just full out and out persecution going on again.
Oh, I think we're right around the corner from it. But you know, we take comfort in the fact that Scripture tells us that, right? That we will be hated because of His name. And we should wear that, more Christians should wear that as a badge of honor and not shrink back from it.
That's very interesting. I'm talking to Joe Sharp. Joe is the executive director of Palm Beach Atlantic University and here in Orlando. And this is a recent promotion for him into this position. And we're going to hear more about that coming up in our next segment. This is Afternoons with Mike. You're in tune to The Shepherd. Don't go away. We'll be right back. In the studio with me is Joe Sharp. He's the executive director of PBA, that's Palm Beach Atlantic University, and that is in Orlando. And Joe, you mentioned during the break that you come from a family, you said, of sisters, right? You have sisters, and are you the only brother?
Well, it even gets better than that, Mike. I had six sisters and three brothers, so we were a family of 10.
Wow, that is a big family.
I always say six sisters and one bathroom. There you go.
I thought, by the way you said that, I thought you were the only guy among a bunch of sisters, but you had some brothers as well.
I had three.
What did your dad do?
He was a welder for General Tire and Rubber Company.
Man, that's awesome. So he and your mom, they were busy raising a big family.
Yes, they were.
Now,
yes,
you probably you didn't know too many other people that would have had as many siblings as you, right?
Not as many, but I tell you, I had many friends that had four, five, and six kids in their family. So, yeah.
Yeah, we had, Cindy and I had four, and that was, in our day, considered a lot. Mm-hmm. Although we knew some people that, in fact, I've got one friend that had 10.
Wow.
Yeah, it's just amazing. Yeah. It's just not every day you get to see that, though. But so you mentioned that the context was, you had mentioned that you found yourself not short of words because you had sisters. Mm-hmm. And so you were a talkative family then.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. It was a lot of fun. I mean, we were kind of each other's best friends. I remember many, many times we had many friends around the neighborhood, but you already had a built-in group. And we'd go out in the backyard, which wasn't very big. And my mother made sure that we kind of stayed in that backyard and didn't get out and about in the neighborhood. It was a fine neighborhood, but it wasn't the safest at times. There were some elements that ran the streets.
Well, what did they think? What did all your siblings think when you're working as a young man for a Christian college, and you weren't even a believer yourself?
Well, I talk to my siblings about this. I was kind of, to be honest with you, I was the one that was spoiled rotten in the family. I mean, I was treated a little differently. And I've talked to them about that. I said, why don't you take me in the closet and just pulverize me? And they said, no. They said, Joe, there was just something about you that was different. So they're very proud. And they're very, very proud. And I feel equally about them. They're just wonderful individuals. I've lost two of my brothers, but they were just wonderful individuals, and we were close family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can tell that. That's wonderful. Yeah. Well, so here now you're on the road. You've got your first and then another job as a recruiter in a Christian college, yep. Still an unbeliever. Mm-hmm. What was the road like that took you to faith in Christ?
Well, it was a long period of time. It was probably somewhere around 15 years down the road. But I tell you, the foundation, and there were three different schools that I worked with, because I worked with a for-profit entity in education, and they would contract with small liberal arts Christian college primarily. And I moved around from Indiana, North Carolina to Boston. And they were great examples, for the most part, at those locations of what a Christian could be. Now, I didn't know at the time I was absorbing that. And the school up in Boston was the one that really impacted me. And this is still years before I became a believer. But there was one young lady there that just never seemed to have a bad day. Mm. And she had a really tough job. She dealt with transcripts, and she had a really tough job that could be very stressful. And I remember walking into her very directly, and I said, I got to ask you something. I said, why are you always in the mood that you're in? And to her credit, and there needs to be more of us like this, she looked at me and she said, because I love Jesus. Mm. And it was impacting to me. Mm. So these are things that I kind of logged in my brain, and I saw many, and some of them I'm dear friends with today, that they were a great example for a non-believer like myself at the time that would, little did I know, would impact me down the road when I do finally find mm-hmm. the Lord. But I moved down here to Florida with State in Education, and it got my life. I was a guy who'd put my feet on the floor, started the day and say, how do I need to resolve my problems? Well, God, as I say, stopped knocking on my door, and he kicked my door down. I was at a point, I was in a marriage, 19-year marriage, that my wife wanted out of the marriage. Mm-hmm. I had a house where I lived in North Carolina that I'd been trying to sell for 4 years, couldn't sell it. Financially, I was struggling. He took me to the end of my rope, and I needed help. And I had a sister out in Colorado that was a believer. But I would contact her and say, Julie, what do I need to do? What do I need to do? And she said, well, you need to trust in the Lord. And he had lined things up. As I mentioned to you, Mike, I'm legally blind, low vision. Mm-hmm. And he had lined things up for me. I went to a low vision conference probably a year before this point, and I talked to individuals at a booth, and they were giving away Bibles on tape. It was a ministry at the time, but, you know, because I'll talk to anybody. And I struck up a conversation with them as a non-believer, and I'm thinking, okay, how do I get out of this? So they asked me to fill out a form. I did. They sent me one in the mail. And when that came, I put it up on the shelf. A year later, I needed help because my life was spiraling out of control. And I would ride my bike, and I'd listen to my country music or my books on tape. I substituted that for that Bible on tape. And that's where it just grabbed me. Hmm. I would ride down the road and start weeping and not know why am I crying. Of course, my resource, my sister in Colorado, and she'd say, Joe, that's the Holy Spirit. And mm-hmm. I said, okay, you got to help me out there. What are you talking about? And so it was from that, I mean, he just opened my eyes that I felt like a junior high boy with his first girlfriend. I was so in love with Jesus.
Do you remember what it was, what book you were reading at the time?
I don't, but I believe it may have been the book of John, which is what we tell our non-believing friends.
Yeah.
And it just grabbed me. And and it was like the scales fell off. And I would read the Bible. The same sister gave me that Bible in 1994. She gave me a Bible, and that's the one I was using. And it just came to life. I just understood it. And I was just so in love with Jesus. I couldn't hardly do my work. I was just smitten. I wanted to know more and more about him.
That's a great story.
That was in 2003.
Now, you mentioned your eyes and reading. I know you said that you've got this condition that was caused from scarring, and is kind of a freaky thing with dust in the air from... And that they don't think there was any other reason or any other cause than just being the dust that was in the region where you were.
Yeah, it was in Louisiana when I was in college. And within that region of the United States, there's a fungus called histoplasmosis. And the eye doctor, the subretinal specialist that I went to when I started having my problems, he knew immediately. He said, this is histo. They call it histo. He said, this is a result of exposure to histoplasmosis. At some point in your life, you were exposed to it. And I told him, you know, where I went to college, where I lived. He said, there's no doubt that's where you picked it up.
And this thing is an aviary fungus that is often caused from droppings from ducks or birds or high concentration of fowl in the area. And it causes these issues. And the impact came for you much later.
Yeah, I was probably a sophomore when this happened. So what, probably 22-ish, somewhere around there, 21. And when I was 30, I recall when it happened, there was some distortion in my vision. And I was driving at the time, still driving. But when I'd look at straight lines, or I'd look at a car, and the peripheral vision would come by me, and it looked like the top of the car was crushed in. Well, of course, it wasn't. It was just the distortion that came out to be that it was bleeding in my eyes from those scars. And so it was the distortion from the blood. And so I'd went, and he said, you have something very serious. You know, you always wonder what you think if the doctor would come in, you have this terminal degree or whatever, or disease. This one, he came in and he said, well, you have something very serious and you're going blind. The world stopped at that moment.
I think it would for most of us.
Because I knew blindness is complete darkness, right? That's all. I just thought, if you're blind, then you can't see anything. Well, low vision, legally blind low vision, is I have my peripheral vision. I don't have any central vision. That's why I don't drive. But I can walk across, and I could, you know, most people wouldn't know that I have a vision problem unless I told them. Or if they asked me to read something.
Well... And I think it's a story in itself that you are in the position that you are. And that should be very encouraging to people who are facing similar, if not what would be life-changing type of diagnoses. Many people just say, well, my life is over. I can't do anything. And you're proving all that wrong.
Yeah. It just, you've got two ways to go with this. You can go in a corner, and you can focus on what you can't do and the trauma that you're going in, or you can face it head on. I just chose to face it head on and focus on what I can do and not what I can't do. I remember my brother, when he first found out that I had this, him talking to me, and he said, boy, he says, of all people, you get it. And I remember saying at that time, why not me? Why am I so special? It's just something that, you know, this happened and we'll deal with it. I've had my moments, of course, but this is it. When I got it, I didn't know. It's part of my journey to know Christ. It's absolutely part of my journey. I would not trade it for anything. The fact that I know Christ, and this is part of my journey in it. And if I could, Mike, just, we found out some news about 2 weeks ago that, my son-in-law, who's 39, has given us our three grandkids, has been diagnosed with stage 4 colon and liver cancer. Now, that's a really dark time, and we're going through it. But here's the piercing light of Christ. He and I were talking last Wednesday, and we've been praying for him for a long time to be saved. And I were talking last Wednesday, and he asked if I would pray the prayer with him of faith. And Joe. he says, I want to serve him any way I can. And now you can imagine my excitement. I'm here in Orlando. He's down in Boynton Beach, mm-hmm. and he's talking to me on the phone, and I'm trying to keep myself calm of something I've been praying for a very long time.
Sure.
And he has accepted Christ, and he just wants to know anything and everything there is about Christ. He wants to serve him. And I said, God will allow you to serve him. And I said, and it could be a nurse that walks into your room. And he's already impacted his family. I told him, you have impacted me. Mm-hmm. His outlook is fabulous. And his soul is healed. Now we're praying for his body to be mm-hmm. healed. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Well, we join you in that prayer for him. What's his first name?
Daniel.
Daniel. We'll be praying for Daniel.
Thank you. But it's attitude, right? I mean, he's faced it head on.
And Joel, you said something earlier, and I got to tie these two things together. Where in the progress or digression of your vision mm-hmm. did your actual prayer to come to know the Lord yourself happen? How closely related were those two things?
Well, I came to know the Lord in 2003, and my vision, it would have been in 1979.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was 30, so it would have been about 8 years later, so somewhere around 84, 85 mm-hmm. is when my vision started going bad. So many years
mm-hmm.
that the vision had stopped. Typically, this condition starts at 30 years old, ends when you're 40. So it's pretty textbook for me. But the vision, because I was riding my bike and it all tied together that God, when I'd ride my bike from downtown Del Rey, where I lived, to work out by the Boynton Beach Mall, I would pass a church. And I always felt called to go in that church. Now, this is a non-believer at the time, but of mm-hmm. course, why would I act on that? So, but when the Lord just kind of broke me and said, I need something, and I'm listening to this, the Bible on tape, that church that would call me as I'd ride by there each day, I said, I got to go to that church. I didn't even know what kind of church it was. It wasn't important to me. I felt I needed to go to that church. And that's where, when I walked in, I felt right at home. And there was a pastor there at the time that just really took me under his wings and just mentored me and answered all my questions. So it was part of my journey because of my vision. When I first lost my vision, my wife at the time made a comment to me, and she wasn't being cruel. She just said, you know, you used to have such joy and happiness, and now since you've lost your vision, you don't seem like you have joy anymore. And I thought that was I didn't realize that, but that was her observation, mm-hmm. right? Now, fast forward many years to 2003, part of my testimony is now I use that she said, you, when you lost your vision, your physical vision, you lost your joy, but I gained my spiritual vision, and the joy that I've experienced at that time and ever since is beyond any joy that I ever experienced during physical, with my physical vision.
And that's exactly my point why I brought it up, because you said earlier when you were talking about coming to know the Lord, mm-hmm. you literally used the expression, it was just like the scales fell off your eyes and you could clearly see.
Yes.
And I find that to be so such an amazing example and analogy that a person who is literally fighting with not a normal amount of vision,
right,
to be able to use that metaphor to say, that's what's happened on the inside of my heart. Mm-hmm. I can clearly see. That's a beautiful thing. It's a wonderful thing God's done for you.
It truly is a true blessing.
It is. I'm talking to Joe Sharp. He's the executive director, PBA, that's Palm Beach Atlantic University. And he's in Orlando and he still lives in the South Florida area, right? And you...
Correct.
Do the commuting thing, as many people do, and is up here during the week. He's doing a great job. How many, 6 weeks or 7 weeks?
Yeah, it's seventh or eighth week now mm-hmm. on the job.
Into this position.
Mm-hmm.
And we're so happy to have him in the community. We're going to be back in a minute to talk about Palm Beach, how you might actually find yourself attending this wonderful place maybe in 2021. We used to talk about 2020 vision. I think we need to start talking about 2021 vision right now. 2020's vision, so to speak, has not turned out just exactly the way any of us thought it would. Oh, my goodness. Joe Sharp is my guest, and this is Afternoons with Mike. You're in tune to The Shepherd. We'll be right back. You have found us. This is The Shepherd, and the program is Afternoons with Mike Gilland with you. Joe Sharp is my guest today. Joe is the executive director of Palm Beach Atlantic. And, you know, this is a wonderful school. Many people have really jumped in on the bandwagon in recent years to take advantage of schools like Palm Beach Atlantic, because of the fact that they are a niche school in the sense that they serve a way that a lot of schools traditionally don't. They offer things that are really aimed at helping adults through the process of not only attending a university, and we know that so much in the COVID era is done online anyway, but their hours, the way that they've set up their school structure, it's really aimed at helping you achieve the dream of getting a degree, of getting your education, of maybe branching out into a new area, becoming skilled in an area that up until you started school at PBA, it was only a thought, only a wish, only a dream. But you guys make that dream come true for people all the time.
Well, we like to think we do. We do offer a really good product, and it's out there designed specifically for those needs. The adult student, as I mentioned earlier, life gets in the way.
Mm-hmm.
Life can get in the way. And so they need something that's convenient, allows them to fit into their schedule and accelerate it so they can move forward and complete their degree if they do not have an undergraduate degree in a fairly reasonable amount of time. And so many of them have started, it could have been 10 years ago, 5 years ago, 15 years ago or more, and they want to finish something they started. Now, we'll look at those credits and we'll accept most of them as long as the grades are there, and it'll build towards their 120 required. So we offer organizational leadership, which is a broad enough degree that's going to fit into any type of background that anybody has, whether it's in the service industry, whether it's in manufacturing, sales, it really doesn't matter. The organizational leadership will answer that. Community psychology. It was a psychology degree up until not very long ago, and we put the community element in it, and it's really designed to kind of touch on the social work side of our issues today with the psychology, mixing with the psychology. And then, of course, because we're a faith-based institution, we're going to offer a degree in ministry, and we're offering a Christian studies. The ministry is going to be probably more geared towards people that might want to get into the ministry themselves, maybe pastorate. And then the Christian studies undergraduate degree is going to be more for lay people that want to maybe, you know, just increase their knowledge base of scripture and maybe lead Bible studies or be lay leaders within their church.
Now, with that, they still get a degree, though.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
it's a BA in Christian Studies, absolutely.
Yeah, a bachelor's in Christian Studies. And when you come, do you find that there are a lot of these adults that start off at Palm Beach Atlantic? Do they have any schooling at all, or are they just starting from scratch?
I think the majority of them have some type of schooling. We do certainly have a good percentage of them that nothing, they don't have anything in their background. However, one of the things we'll do, because they're adult students, right? It doesn't mean that they don't have that experience and training that may not be just on a formal way within the university or college setting, but they've got maybe certificates, licensures, corporate trainings, and we have a program that allows them to document all of that, and they may be able to earn credits through our professional education credits through those that's going to build towards that degree.
Mm-hmm.
So they may not have to start out at zero, even if they don't have formal college.
Mm-hmm. Now, that is what kind of process is that to be credited or being given hours, so to speak, for work experience? What type of a process? What do you look for?
Well, what we'll look for, it could pretty much be across the board anything, but we're going to look for documentation first and foremost.
Mm-hmm.
And so if it's corporate training, maybe they clocked 40 hours for a training certificate. They need to document that. And so we then will look at talking to our faculty or trained experts in the area, and they will assess that and they will determine how many credits they may get for that.
Mm.
If it's military training, that comes across on their DD-214, their military records.
Mm-hmm.
That's a quick transfer over. Realtor's license, insurance broker's license, those are quick. They come right over for a set number of credits.
And I think that might surprise some people who are wanting to do this. They might find out that their goal is much more attainable than what they ever dreamed.
Oh, absolutely. They could. I mean, when you look at it, a typical degree is going to be 120 credit hours for undergraduate degree. And if they can come in with professional education credits, could total 15, 20 credits. Now they're starting to look at something that's thinking, okay, that may take me only 2.5 years to get.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that it's important that individuals, working adults, need to have a conversation with us, because they may look at that and say, well, that's just too far-fetched. This is too way out there. We want to have a conversation with them. We don't sell used cars.
Mm-hmm.
We want to assess where they are.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to be very, I think in many cases, surprised at what they may be able to bring in with what their experiences are. There's even a chance that if they don't have any documentation on licensures or certificates, but yet, let's say they've been a photographer for 15 years. Well, odds are they have knowledge of taking a beginning photography class that might be worth 3 credit hours. So they can write an essay, compare that to the syllabus of that course. They may be able to get credit for that.
Wow.
So, I mean, we try to be flexible in that. We're not giving credits away, but they've earned these.
Mm-hmm.
They over their life, they've earned this knowledge. And so they ought to be able to get credit for it.
I think that is the big deal. I mean, it's, again, it's well said. You're not giving it away.
No.
But most people do have, just in the general, if they've kept a responsible job, if they've worked hard, and most of them would have, they wouldn't be talking to you anyway if they hadn't.
Right.
But they've worked hard at what they're doing, and it's just simply an acknowledgement of that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And they're not aware that it even exists.
Hmm. How do you see right now COVID impacting your next year? We all know how it's done. I mean, I think early on this year, we've gone the gamut of hoping, as President Trump said, that it would be over with by Easter.
Mm.
And that date came and went. And then it was summer, because we all knew that COVID was going to disappear with the heat.
Right. Right.
And it didn't disappear with the heat. And it wasn't scared away by fall football.
Right.
Here we are now in December, and now fresh lockdowns happening across the nation. What's 2021 looking like for you guys in the academic world?
Well, like all the schools, we've had to adjust, right? We've had to do some online courses, and we had to go to what we call high flex. And high flex is really, it's a synchronous way for students to attend classes. So our classes are designed to meet one night a week, from 6 to 10 for 8 weeks. Well, in a high flex format, they would be able to zoom in to a link at home on their computer and be there live time with that. So we've gone to that format in a pretty wide way,
mm-hmm.
trying to keep the separation. We have now a mixed group. We'll have some students coming to class that can separate out in the classroom, and others will stay home, and they'll be high flexing via Zoom with the faculty in the classroom.
It's like a hybrid situation.
It is, and it's worked out pretty well. As I think we'll experience in many cases, what COVID has done is caused many industries to think outside the box, and there will be some things that'll stay.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the hybrid part of in our high flex model may stay, and it allows us to offer things in a little bit different way. So all the schools have had to adjust. You know, we do the sanitizing, we have the masks, those types of things, and we do the separation inside the classroom. But it's worked pretty well for us. Some people, that online's just not for them, right? They need more eyeball to eyeball. This is not exactly eyeball to eyeball, but it does help with the high flex. And they still have the option to come to class in many cases.
Your peers in education, what is their viewpoint looking toward 2021? Do they believe that we're going to ever get past this and get back to, let's say, the old normal where classes could be held in big lecture halls and that kind of thing?
Well, I can't speak for the entire industry, but I mean, my hope and my desire and my expectation, quite frankly, is that we will get back to that.
Mm-hmm.
There's whether it's the vaccine of those who wish to take it or just COVID in itself just kind of diminishing. I really see that we'll get back to that, but not without adjustments that I think will stay, as I mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Education sometimes is pretty rigid, right? The model of how we offer classes, sometimes we need to be forced in it. Maybe this is just one of those times we're forced into looking outside the box a little deeper.
One of the things that is so weird for me, being a sports lover that I am, watching football games, mm-hmm. watching basketball games mm-hmm. that are being held in empty stadiums, yeah. empty gymnasiums, it's just bizarre, surreal.
It is. It really is. And that, not only the athletic arena, but every arena, it is surreal. And we all are kind of tired of it, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. We're ready to move on.
Yeah.
Ready to get back into the stands. And
yes.
I find myself, this is funny, but I find myself appreciating TV programs, movies that were set in pre-COVID times. And there's this odd thing that I don't think anybody ever would have thought of before, a longing to just be back into a time where you could be in a crowded gymnasium or a crowded auditorium at a concert and not be worried about this or not even have to have a think about it, thought about it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, who would have ever thought that longing would be there for
yeah.
the give me the crowds,
the good old
please.
Days.
I want the crowds. Yeah.
Yeah. I want the people breathing on my neck and knowing it's all right.
Yes.
You're not going to get sick. That's great. Well, I'll tell you what, this is a very exciting time. And Palm Beach, what are the plans? What do you see happening for what you're doing? And as you look ahead, what is this next year going to hold?
Well, we're excited because we're 20 years old in Orlando now. The school itself, I believe, is 54 years old, but Orlando campus, 20 years old. We're going to do the best we can to celebrate that with events, and we'll be promoting that out in various ways so we can hopefully have not only prospective students come by our celebration, but alumni and faculty and even administration will be there. So that's something that we're really going to push hard on. And we're going to also just raise the bar on our awareness. One of my responsibilities coming up to Orlando is to build awareness of Palm Beach Atlantic University. And Mike, thank you so much for allowing me to be on your show. This is part of my desire to do this because we have a secret that has been kept too long, and we want to get it out there and let more and more people know that we have something to offer. Come talk to us, and there may be something that you can bring to the table as a student without an undergraduate degree. It's going to give you some credits, as we were talking about,
mm-hmm.
but it's a faith-based environment,
mm-hmm.
which is important to us. We have the Christian worldview in each of our classrooms. Many of them will open up in prayer, and I know I said, when I'm coming up to Orlando, I'm coming up with God. I'm not bringing God with me. I'm just going up with God.
Mm-hmm.
He's there, and I just want to be his instrument to do whatever I can to help this location grow. Because when the location grows, the message of the gospel is going out across the city through our students that are going to get it inside the classroom, and they're going to take it out. And they're going to experience, just like I did as a non-believer, because we have a lot of non-believers come into our school. They want our product. They enjoy it. That's what they're looking for. But just like me as a non-believer, I got to work around believers, and I saw a great example of what it meant to live out faith. Wasn't beating me head over the head with a Bible. It was simply being gracious, kind, and that's what our students will experience. And they'll take that outside the classroom across this city. I just envision Palm Beach Atlantic University impacting the city in that way. That's what we can do for the kingdom. And I'm so blessed to be able to be here and have this in front of me to do this with God. I mean, that's, I can't imagine doing anything else right now.
Give us your web address.
It's pba.edu, and you just look for locations. You'll see Orlando there, or you can call 888-844-PBA-Orlando. 844-PBA-Orlando.
I mean, you guys have jumped on that acronym for your domain like nobody's business, pba.edu. I mean, that's got a poetic charm to it, right?
It kind of rolls off your tongue, doesn't it?
It does. Yes. Well, Joe Sharp, I want to say thank you so very much for coming up and being on our program. Well, officially welcome to Orlando.
Thank you.
And we're so excited to have you in the community. I know the school has been here a long time. I do believe you're going to be a real great asset. Just talking with you, getting to know you, I can see why you are in your position. And especially thank you for your, I believe, such an encouraging testimony of working through the own difficulties that you've experienced yourself in the vision thing, in walking into knowledge with Jesus, and your obvious love for him. I think it's very inspiring, Joel.
Thank you.
Got to have you back on my show sometime. Will you come back in?
I'd love to do it.
All right.
Thank you, Mark.
Joe Sharp from Palm Beach Atlantic University. And friends, thank you for being with me today on The Shepherd. And we'll catch you next time right here on Afternoons with Mike.